Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. That's the beginning part of Nina Simone. I wish that I knew what it feels like to be free. And we have here on the air right now Ms. Leona Brando, who is the president of New Vision Organization. That's NBO. That's a prisoner activist organization that is affiliated with a number of activists who are interested in providing services to help prisoners enjoy health care, also legal services to appoint, etc. I'll let her explain it to you herself, and we want to thank you very much for joining us here at Human Rights Demand, NBO, New Vision Organization, with Leona Brando. I was a little delayed getting on air. I changed my password, Leona, because every time I came to Human Rights Demand, I had to recreate my shows because they had been taken down. Yours was taken down. Everybody's show was taken down except Native American Affairs. And so I had to change the password and rebuild the shows. I also went ahead and added more time to your show. Excuse me. And so today you have, instead of 45 minutes, you have 2 hours. So go right ahead.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, Marianne. Thank you so much. We have a guest on with us today. Her name is Pam Ella, and Pam is going to be speaking about her son's situation. But we have recently learned quite a bit about the three mentally ill prisoners who have either been scalded to death or baked alive in their prison cells. And I have been on the internet all between last night and today with advocates across the country who are infuriated with what has happened. I just spoke also earlier today with the attorney that's with New Vision Organization, Anchor Jane, and he is willing to work with any lawyers, any media, anyone that wants to get involved in trying to do something about these recent issues. This prisoner in Florida was put in a cell. I mean, he was mentally ill. He had actually went on the floor, and the guards wanted him to clean up his feces. And because he didn't, they locked him in a shower, and they scalded him to death. Prisoners in the block could hear the man screaming for a half an hour. They said the skin was literally melted right off of this man. I have been so upset with all of this, and I really want to start talking about this more. And today we're going to have Pam Ella on the phone, who is with us, because her son is a victim of targeting by the guards. Although his situation hasn't gotten to that point yet, there are prisoners across this country that I am now worried about, because if these guards can get away with these things, to actually do these kind of barbaric, inhumane, criminalistic things, acts on these people that are caged, then something needs to be done about it. So I'd like to, if Pam Ella is on with
Leona,
us now.
Could I just say something regarding that? The guards who locked the black man in the shower in Florida, their case has been examined, and it's been decided already not to bring charges against the murderers. Corrections officers. Regarding the man who was baked to death in Rikers Island, the Jenny Cochran firm got that case because they won't let me use the internet. They won't let me tell people about the Cochran firm fraud. And so they continually are able to go and get cases from black families whose members have been victimized, like my brother was, by police murders and by prison and jail guard murders. So they have that case just like they went and got the case regarding Mr. Chavis Carter, who was handcuffed in the back of a police car and shot in the head. And they say that this young man who was handcuffed, double locked behind his back, and was left-handed, that he shot himself in the right temple. It happened that the camera stopped rolling at that exact moment. So the Cochran firm continues to go get these cases where inexcusable crimes have been done by people in authority because I'm not allowed to use the Internet services as I should, and that's the reason why we're so heavily censored. They want the Cochran firm, they rely on the Cochran firm to go and get these cases and protect the government when these murders happen, like they did when my mentally ill brother was secretly arrested. That was a kidnapping because his arrest was not recorded. They secretly arrested him, kept him 18 days in custody without acknowledging that they had him in custody to his family or his social worker, and murdered him on the 18th day by undisclosed means, yet undisclosed, even though it's been almost 11 years. And the Jenny Cochran firm got that case and told us that we were not to discuss Larry Neal's murder with anyone because they were handling it. So they handled it all right. They covered it up. So this is what they do, and this is how they're continually able to get these high-profile police cases, and you almost never hear of any justice coming out of them. So I just want everyone to know that, and to know that, yes, the mentally ill are very victimized behind bars, and, yes, they can be killed without any accountability whatsoever. Of all the people who are treated as though they're not citizens, the mentally ill of any race, but particularly black people, are treated worse. So thank you very much, Leona.
Well, Pam's son is mentally ill as well, and she's going to be talking about what happened recently with her son. And, Pam, if you're on with us, I hope you can introduce yourself.
Yes, my name's Pamela Eller, and my son has been labeled a couple times as being a rat when he's not. The first time they labeled him a rat and had gang members, the European Kindred, attack him twice, and that caused his brain damage. Recently, he was labeled a rat because he told his counselor that he was thinking of committing suicide. They locked him in the hole. He filed a grievance, and they didn't like that, so they labeled him a rat, and they put the same gang, European Kindred, in the canteen. When he went to canteen, they were there. So he filed a grievance about that. And the guards are the ones that are doing this, the guards and the mental health counselors. And I've been writing letters and complaining about this, and it's come to my attention that this is pretty prevalent on the mental health tier. They're targeted, they're extorted for canteen goods by other prisoners that don't belong on that tier, and they have to pay this extortion. And I just, after listening to some of these stories, I don't know if we're doing any good or how we can. What can we do?
And, Pam, I think that's good that you're saying this, because there's plenty that we can do, but we have to come together as a nation. Advocates, family members, the media, we all need to start coordinating. We all need to start bringing everyone together to make this stop. It's inhumane. The very people who should be overseeing these prisoners and ensuring their safety are the very ones that are brutalizing these people, that are coming out with these bogus misconducts, that are spreading bogus lies to other people, other prisoners, that are causing all of these things to happen. You're talking to us and everyone else out there about what's happened with your son is a big step and I want you to talk more about Vincent's situation, the brutal beating that you mentioned about the gangs beating him up and causing him the brain damage and the medical issues, everything that you've been doing. And I want to also mention, Pam herself is an advocate. Pam's been advocating for prisoners all through Oregon, and she's been helping a lot of the prisoners. But now it's her own son that she's needing help for. And this is very important that we support her and that we give her all the help that we can as far as the situation with her son as well. So, Pam, can you just explain a little bit more about the situation with how much brain damage? What was the outcome of all of this?
Well, Vincent was attacked in 2006, and they sent him to the Oregon State Penitentiary, and they never followed up on the brain being hit in the head. And he was experiencing terrific headaches. They were awful. And I kept writing and calling. I called everybody. I wrote letters. People that I know with Jeff Dix Medical Coalition wrote letters. And to my senator and to the inspector general. Finally, a psychiatrist, not a doctor, they kept telling him, you're have stress headaches and you're just manipulating the system, you're faking it. They did a CAT scan and his brain had been pushed to one side, 11 millimeters to one side, because the subdural hematoma was so large in there. When they did the brain surgery, there was old blood. It was clots and the blood was very dark and it was oily, and they said it was like old blood. It was 10 months old. He bled in the head for 10 months, and it left him with brain damage, PTSD, anxiety, hypertension, and he still suffers from that. In the meantime, like you said, I do advocate for other prisoners, and they're treated terribly. Now, the doctors that, and the counselors and some of the guards that were covering up Vincent's head injury and not treating him, have been transferred to other prisons. They didn't get fired. We had a lawsuit and we won, but those people were transferred to another prison. Yeah. So they're doing the same thing to other prisoners here in Oregon, just somewhere else.
Exactly. This is what happened even in Pennsylvania. When all these deaths occurred, they started moving the staff to different locations. They started moving the transferring the prisoners out to different prisons, different, you know, facilities in different states. So this is how they get away from all of the investigations that go on. And again, I question NAMI. I question the American Psychological Association. I question the International American Psychological Association. I wonder what they are getting all this funding to do, because these people are the ones that should be out there big time advocating for all of these mentally ill that are being severely abused. Not only the mentally ill, but those that are becoming mentally ill as a result of the abuses they're going through. And this is something that we really need to start focusing on, is holding these people accountable. We talk about our government, but if our government doesn't see it coming from professionals that are out there in insisting that something be done about it, using their qualifications, their degrees, and all of these things to actually make something happen, then the government is not going to act on anything, because they're going to look at it as though the American Psychological Association doesn't find anything wrong with it. So I really blame them. I blame the American Psychological Association. I blame NAMI, because they're getting funding to do something. And every time I turn around, I'm seeing all these donation buttons on their websites, because that's what it's become. It's become a thing about donations, about funding. Amnesty International, several years back, I contacted them about the abuses that were going on in Pennsylvania. I tried to get help from everybody. And they referred me to their London office. And I asked them why, because I said, I'm in the United States. You know, this is something that's happening in our country. Why do I have to go through another country? But this is what it's all about. No one's being held accountable if they're doing all their work or claiming to do all their work in other countries, because they don't have to worry about being monitored. So I wonder if they're even doing anything in those countries. But these are issues that we really need to focus on, because too many people are getting away with too many things, because nobody's being held accountable, and everyone's passing the buck to someone else. And in the meantime, all these innocent people, and I say innocent because they're in prison serving their time. They don't need to be brutalized and tortured while in prison. They're in the Department of Corrections, not the Department of More Torture. And again, I'm going to go back to our country where our president will insist that the United States does not tolerate tortures in other countries, and yet it's happening in our own country. And I want to know, what is the president or the government, the American government, what are they doing about these things? Someone needs to be held accountable.
They're making lots of money, Leona. They're prison investors. If you look at the list of the prison investors, you will find many people who are in the Justice Department, who are senators and congresspersons, who are police chiefs, who are prison wardens. I have no doubt that most of these people are prison investors, and therefore they will do nothing to harm prison profits. The mentally ill have comprised over one half of the U.S. prisoners. They let them out of mental hospitals on purpose so that they mm-hmm. would wind up in prison. Some people are in there for as little as vagrancy, and they went in 20 years ago for vagrancy, and they keep lengthening their sentence because they keep breaking the rules. They break the rules because they're mentally ill. And so this is a prison profiteering game in a nation that has reverted back to slavery. Thank you.
Well, the beautiful struggles, which is consists of advocates from Virginia all over the place, they're actually talking about coming together and finally doing something. We contacted other advocates in California and other places, and one of the advocates said, "Well, you know, they've already had it in the paper. You know, it's been widely publicized in the paper. So I'm saying, what does that have to do with it? It's been highly publicized, but it's not highly enough because no one at this end, no one on the East Coast has heard of it. You know, so we need to do more than just expect it to be highly publicized in some of the main newspapers and then forgotten about. You know, it's like the Trayvon Martin case. I mean, no one hears about that anymore unless whoever's keeping it alive can keep it alive. But these things happen. They do these investigations. Those guards that did what they did to Vincent, nothing's happening. They're not being held accountable for spreading the word. And once the word gets out, I mean, what does that mean? That means he can't, even if he's transferred, even then his life is a danger because the word has already gotten out there. So these people, these guards, these people that burned these people alive, these prisoners alive, they may have been taken off duty during the investigation, but this is a situation where they shouldn't only be taken off duty. They should be fired. They should be put in prison because they did something worse than a lot of these prisoners did.
Yes, they
did something a lot worse. I mean, to scorcher someone I can't even imagine. As I said, I couldn't sleep last night thinking about it. How can anybody, any human being do something like that unless they are so animalistic? You know, they talk about Charles Manson, and here they're worse. So what are we going to do about these prisoners, these prison guards? We need to do something about it. And if our government doesn't have enough sense to do something about it, then they're the main part of the problem. But the government
yes,
is
they
are. Understand now that this is slavery. Understand this is slavery. We've had inhuman things to happen in this country for hundreds of years, and it was called slavery. The people were the property of their owners. Their owners could shoot them in the street, and it was their property that they were shooting, and it was okay. Still treated like slaves, and now so are white people. A white man who was a prisoner in Alabama was starved to death while behind bars. He only had a little while left on his sentence, but they starved him to death. A Latino young man was starved to death in a CCA jail in Utah. These things happen to people all the time, and both of those people were mentally ill. I want you to know mm-hmm. that Nazis did not begin by killing the Jews in Germany. That's the lie that we've been taught. But if you go to the Jewish Virtual Library online, it will teach you that 300,000 mentally ill people, no matter what race they are, black, Jewish, or Caucasian, were actually removed from their families and killed first. First thing they did to make the master race was they got rid of everyone who was mentally handicapped, and then next they started killing people who were physically handicapped. And finally, they got around to the minorities. So in America, we have isolated some 1.25 million people with mental illness behind bars. And yes, they are being killed. We hear about them being killed behind bars, and we see them being murdered on our streets. Now, behind bars, the police and the prison guards have some protection because they don't let those films out, and you may not get to see the murders that happen. They also do not let the media into prisons. It's just like West Papua, which is under genocide by Indonesia. Foreign media is not allowed in West Papua because they're doing the people too bad. Well, America does the same thing with the prisons. The media can't go in. And so this is because there are too many murders happening behind bars. My brother was secretly arrested and murdered. They didn't murder him on the street. They took him and locked him up to murder him. And so as it is now, we have a society where anybody can be secretly arrested, hidden away, and murdered behind bars. That is what happened to Larry Neal, and I ask you to look online for wrongful death of Larry Neal. I knew this situation was going to spread until it affected more people. They murdered my brother in 2003, and now her son is at risk, your guess. And many other people have already perished due to prison murders. And there's no one to go to stop it because, believe me, in 11 years, I have been to everyone. And I found out recently that the white liberals are the ones who are protecting the Jenny Cochran firm. That's being done by white liberals. They keep giving that law firm that helped the jail cover up my brother's murder, they keep giving that law firm awards, because they keep deporting black families. And so, unfortunately, even black press will not afford to let families know to be wary of that law firm and not sign contract with them because they will bury your cases. So this is what's happening. It's something that, just like slavery was, everyone was involved in it, not just the people in Mississippi or Georgia or Tennessee. Everyone was involved in enslaving black people. They were involved either by their apathy or they actually owned slaves, including black people owned slaves. And that is the case today. We have many black people who own prison stuff. And so they are complicit in the abuse and mistreatment of prisoners. Go ahead, Leona.
They are. And that's why I say in this day and age, we have a lot of black politicians who don't even do anything to help their own. Years ago, I watched Phil Donahue's show, and he had an audience with all blacks on there. And by the time they got through talking about their own jealousy and their own anger towards one another, he said, "How can you expect the whites to accept you when you can't accept your own?" And this is what I see happening today with the media. They're looking at us, we're not doing anything, and they're looking at their own benefits, what they're going to get out of siding with the system, with the government. That's why they get away with it, because you never hear anyone that's in the media. You don't hear anything about their kids, and you cannot tell me that their kids don't get into jams, because every child at some point in time, every child throughout his lifetime messes up in some way, shape, or form. So the media they're benefiting from keeping their mouth shut. But at the same time, in order for the media to do anything about it, again, we have to come out in numbers. We have to make this out, make it known. We have to do something, because I know it's not about quality when it comes to something like this. It's about quantity, and that's what we have to look at, coming together and as a nation. And I say all races, all religions, whatever the case may be, we need to come together, because it could be one of ours that gets hurt really bad like that.
My son got help, it was because there was numbers of people writing and calling.
Exactly.
It takes a lot of people. And it just came to my attention, speaking of the staff, there's no testing for staff there's no psychological testing or any kind of testing on human rights. One doctor that was just hired here in Oregon was fired from his private practice because he was selling body parts. Now he's working in the prison. So they don't care who they hire.
You know, I had a friend on the Cape, I mean, who was a police officer, and I'll tell you, if he was around now, I would actually have him talking with everybody, because he can tell you himself, the even law enforcement, they have a high rate of anger, and even most of them abuse their own wives. They abuse their wives. They beat them because they think they can get away with it. Or, I'm sorry, they know they can get away with it. So there's, when it comes to prison issue, well, the even law enforcement, there are people out there that shouldn't even be working in law enforcement, because they're supposed to be helping the communities, whereas they're doing a lot to damage the communities. And you hear about drugs being brought into the prisons by family members or by friends, and you've heard so many times that it was from guards themselves that bring the drugs in for the prisoners to sell. And that's why
I had an inspector general tell me that it was the families that were smuggling in tobacco and drugs, and I told him, no, it wasn't.
Mm-mm.
It was
even
the guards.
Even in Massachusetts. So all these extra, you know, bringing in the dogs to sniff for drugs, all these things they need to do, as you say, they're not trained, these police officers and these law enforcement, they're not trained enough to be working out there with the communities, with the crime that's going on. And you find so many situations where it's the law enforcement that are found guilty of committing a lot of fraudulent crimes in the communities. But, again, the sad thing is it's happening, and regardless of who's behind it all, something needs to be done with it. When we have people overseeing caged individuals who are trying to serve their time without incident, and then they get beaten, brutalized, burned, I mean, we're talking not even dogs don't deserve that, never mind human beings. But anybody that has that mindset to be able to do something that horrific, they should be in jail themselves.
Yes, they should.
And too many people are getting—they're covering up their because of this brotherhood. And this is another thing I'm sick of hearing: the police have their brotherhood, you know, the firemen have their brotherhood, the government actually—they have their brotherhood. Everybody has their brotherhood. These people were not born in the same bed with them when their mothers and fathers had them, but they're all brotherhood. But let one of them commit a major crime and can't get out of it because he's already done it too many times, or they for some reason he has to go to prison. Then all of a sudden the media, well, these very people they call the heroes, are heroes in the communities. Well, let me tell you, policemen, it's not that they're heroes. It's a job they're supposed to be doing. You know, they're not doing anything out of the ordinary. The heroes was back in the days of World War II and Vietnam. You know, I had relatives that went to those places and came back, and they weren't right after they came back. So what is this brotherhood thing? I mean, that's what it's all about. They cover up for one another because of the brotherhood. A prisoner said one time, if they're not willing to help with the problem, then they're part of the problem. So this is where we need to come together. And any media person or any lawyer or any advocate that wants to join in this movement to make change, to do something about all this, then I welcome them, and we will get help. We will get the help. But
that
we need to show
really
them that we're not
going
to tolerate it.
No,
we need
to
show
help.
Everybody. They need help desperately. And the sad thing is, let's hope that your son gets the help he needs before anything major does happen. And that's why I ask everybody, anybody that's listening to this, we have the letter writing campaign. We have a website, which Vincent's information is all up there. Just like a prisoner in Massachusetts who's trying to get a liver transplant. But he hasn't been getting his medical treatment. But anyone can go either to the website or they can email me and I'll send them all the information. I will be sending the new website link out so everyone can see it. And it has a place where anyone that wants to write to the letter writing on the letter writing campaign can go directly to them, to that site, to that link, get the address, and they can and the contact information for our government leaders, and they can help. And that's what we are asking everybody to do today, is to help this woman with her son and try to come together so that we can do something about these individuals that were burned to death. You know, I don't think that anybody would want it ever to happen to their own loved one. And if we don't do something about it, we're no better than the people that actually have done that. So I ask that all of you, anybody, if you can just try to pick up the phone, go send out emails, go on the Internet. When you go on the Internet, you don't have to type www. You don't have to type HTTP. Just type in whatever government official you're looking for. Contact information, just like you're writing on a piece of paper. Anything that you want to get out there, even the media, go on the Internet, in the browser, type in media outlets by state or media outlets nationwide, contact information for the media outlets, email addresses for the media, whatever the case may be. It's that simple to go on there and just type in that information on the browser, and it will bring you up to a whole lot of links where you can start contacting people.
And it'll take numbers. I contacted major media sources, and I never heard anything, and I continually contacted them. But my guess is I was probably the only one.
And that's what happens. That's what happens. So we need to do it in numbers. And it's not as difficult as people think. It's just
no, it isn't. And it sure helps these guys. These prisoners are just so abused. It really means a lot to them to know that somebody out here cares enough to call and write and continually do it, and to get them some medical treatment for cancer, for hepatitis C, for abuse by the guards that have piled on them and broke their back or their neck. And they just suffer a lot, and
yeah.
they really
yeah.
do need help.
Yeah. And we need to be there for them. We're the voice that they do not have. And someone has to be there for them. And, you know, as I told Mary about her brother, Larry, and also Elizabeth Gaskins, a woman who lost her daughter. Her daughter, and Elizabeth, I'm hoping someday that she will be on the air with us. Her daughter was raped by prison guards. And when she came out, she was never the same. And she committed suicide, unfortunately, a year ago. And this is something that didn't need to happen. It really, really didn't need to happen. But it's not only happening with the males in the prisons, it's happening with the females in the prisons. But with Mary's brother, Larry, and I tell Mary this all the time, something good did come out of it. Because had Larry not been subjected to this abuse, had he not been killed by these vicious guards, Mary would not have been doing this. And as a result, Mary has started something. It's been very positive. She's brought a lot of people together, and there's a lot of good things that are going to come of Larry's death. And as I told Elizabeth Gaskins, the same thing. Her daughter is not going to be dying in vain, because with what has happened with her daughter, a lot of people will see the truth. And our government, hopefully, maybe someday, if they ever become humane, they may start doing something about it.
That's true.
Again,
we have to
come together, and we have to do these things in unity as a team. If they want a brotherhood, let's show them what a real brotherhood can be. You know, let's get together, let's all unite, and let's do something about this.
Yep, that's a brotherhood. I never would have known either if it hadn't happened to Vincent. And then I became very aware of the problem and just how big it is. And I hope that people will join in this effort so that it doesn't happen to them or their loved one, because it can happen to anybody.
It can. We're going to be having...
Could I ask you a question?
Sure.
Could I ask you a question? I want to know, please, whether your son was mentally ill before his brain damage due to the attack, the assault.
No, he wasn't. He was working
so
at
the assault caused his mental illness.
Yes, they did.
Okay.
He was,
could I ask you, who was your attorney? Because it's very unusual for an attorney to actually defend a family after prisoner abuse. Most of them are joking. Most of them are pretending to be your lawyers, and they're siding with the prosecution against you. And so you found a real attorney, a real defender, and I would like to congratulate your attorney and our Legal Victories blog. So what is your attorney's name?
His name is Mr. Rothermick, and he's with Gary Schubert Associates out of Portland, Oregon. They are actually a pro bono firm.
Okay, it's a pro
bono.
Rothermick, R-O-T-H.
Yeah, they deserve recognition.
Okay. It's Rothermick, R-O-T-H-E-R-M-I-C-H. And he's part of the Gary Schubert.
Okay,
Gary
what's the name
Schubert.
Of the firm?
Gary Schubert. And that's two names, Gary Schubert Associates, and they're in Portland, Oregon. They were assigned by Judge Hubel, who is also in Portland, Oregon.
So I have Rothermick, R-O-T-H-E-R-M-I-C-H, and he's
yes.
from the firm of Gary, G-A-R-R-Y?
Just one R.
G-A-R-Y, Schubert, S-H-U-B-E-R-T?
Yes.
Associates, out of Portland, Oregon.
Yes.
And you're right,
and
Mary, there's not too many. Yeah. There's not too many that do that.
We will certainly congratulate Mr. Rothermick out of Portland, Oregon, from the firm of Gary Schubert Associates. And, you know, we need to do that, Leona. We need to do that, advocates. We need to compile a database of attorneys who have successfully defended people against prisoner torture and prisoner murders. So that our
he did a good job.
Will have a database to go to and choose their attorneys, because the attorney that you choose makes all the difference. I saw a film that I placed on my Facebook page of an attorney in Florida. He happened to have been the public defender, and he refused to waive his client's right to a speedy trial. When he stepped up to the podium, the judge asked him, what do you want to do? And he said, I refuse to waive. Evidently, they had talked about it before. And the judge said, well, what do you want to do? He said, well, what do you want to do, Your Honor? Because I refuse to waive. And the judge was so angry with him for refusing to waive his client's right to a speedy trial, which is a constitutional right under the Sixth Amendment, that the judge ordered, he offered the attorney to step out into the hall and fist fight. And so the attorney and him went out into the hall, and the judge beat the attorney down, beat him.
Is that the one that was just on television?
I'm sorry?
Is that the one that was on the news the other day about a judge and a lawyer coming to fist fight? Oh, I saw that.
Yes, well, what you might not know is what they thought about. You have to see the whole film. And what it was about was the attorney was really defending his client, and the judge could not accept it. He would not step aside and waive his client's right to a speedy trial. And the judge told him, just sit down, man, just sit down. I'll handle this. I don't need your help. And the lawyer said, I will not sit down, Your Honor. I have a right to be here. I'm here to defend my client. And the judge said, if you want to, you just step on outside with me and we can fight it out. And he said, well, let's go. And the lawyer walked out. The judge did, too. And the judge, I read, and, of course, the film did not show it, but the judge hit him very hard beside the head. Finally, he walked out the door. So he was like, he got, you know, he thought he might have time to put his dukes up, but he didn't. That judge lit into him. Because, you see, a lot of judges are prison investors. And
corrupt,
these defense attorneys stand in their way of making whatever amount of money they make to remand a person to prison. They're ready to fight about it. And that judge, I believe, is a prime example of that. And the man who this guy was defending may have been mentally ill because the lawyer was saying, and you didn't hear that on the little snippet of the tape, but they have the whole thing on YouTube. He said it's the state's fault that this ever happened. So by him saying it's the state's fault that the assault ever happened, that makes me believe that the man was a mentally ill man who had been denied treatment. And that's how it got to be the state's fault that he did an assault. But that's just me guesstimating because I've heard that so often, that people are denied treatment until they prove themselves to be a danger to self and others. And they can only prove it by doing a crime. And once they do the crime, they still don't get treatment. They get arrested. And so I think that that was the situation in Florida. But I thank you for this attorney's name, and I will certainly look into your son's case and congratulate this man. Do you mind telling us your son's whole name and what facility he's in?
His name's Vincent Padgett, and he's in Oregon State Penitentiary.
Did you say P-A-G-E-N-T?
P-A-D.
No, P-A-D-G-E-T-T.
And he's in Oregon?
Yes, Oregon State Penitentiary.
And what we're trying to do, Mary, is get him transferred out of there into Shutter. What was the name of the facility again, Pamela?
Shutter Creek. It's a minimum security when they have 4 years left, and he has 4 years left.
Okay, give me the name of the facility you want him transferred to again.
Shutter Creek. Like, you know, window shutters.
Two words.
Two.
Are you saying Shutter Creek?
Yes.
Yeah. S-H-U-T-T-E-E. S-H-U-T-T-E-R. He has four more years to go, and this facility there's less prisoners there, more secure, more safe. And he can work on his program so that when he gets out, you know, he'll be able to have something available to him.
Yeah, there's one problem with Vincent. He can't be in a dormitory setting or in a cell with anybody else because of the brain damage and the PTSD and the anxiety. If he's put in with somebody else in a cell or in a dormitory, he can't go to the bathroom.
Mm.
They did that to him. They sent him to Two Rivers, and they put him in another cell with another guy, and he kept telling them he couldn't go to the bathroom, and it was 2 weeks. They left him there, and when they finally got to him, he was laying on the floor. He couldn't go to the bathroom.
Jeez.
He was in pretty bad shape. He was in pain, and they had to take him out and, of course, stick him in the hospital and get him to go to the bathroom. So he does have some problems that go along with the brain damage that he needs help with.
You know, post-traumatic stress syndrome will do that, too. And another thing is a lot of these prisoners, and I know for a fact it happened to my own loved one, they were the sleep deprivation, you know, the lights on 24/7. And this went on for two or three years. And this, to me, this is another form of torture, because when everyone else's light is off and your light is on, and they refuse to shut it, you know, just out of pure ignorance. You know, that in itself is another form of abuse and bogus misconduct, as I said. They have so many of these things going on. It's ridiculous.
Yes, they do that. Ridiculous. They keep them from sleeping. Vincent doesn't sleep very much either.
No.
But they do that. They keep their lights on or they wake them up. They don't let them sleep. And then, of course, if they're mentally ill, they become more unstable.
Worse, yeah.
Yes, because they're not sleeping. It just compounds the problem.
Could I ask you something else? Now, was your son brutalized by the guards or by the other inmates?
He was attacked by the inmates, by a gang. But the guards set him up for it. They used the gang to attack him and hurt him.
Okay.
And that's what they're doing now.
They set
they do
up
a lot
to
of that.
By the gang. And then they did nothing to stop the gang once they attacked them.
Until
no, they did nothing.
Late.
He was actually, with the second attack on him, he had a guard on each side of him. And he was still, a gang member approached him and hit him in the head so hard, it knocked him unconscious. So, no, I don't think they did anything because they were standing right there. They didn't even stop the attack. If they wanted to stop it, they could have.
With the cameras they have in the prisons, they have cameras all over the place in prisons today. I mean,
yep.
They have cameras in the streets. We don't even have privacy in the streets because they have some. They're catching everything on camera, and yet they cannot see it coming when a prisoner is about to be attacked.
Or
you know,
with a guard on each side of them.
You know,
they knew it was coming. They saw it. They did nothing to stop it. And when we asked for the name of the man who attacked him, they gave us documents with the name blacked out. But when we got a whole bunch of the documents, I asked for different medical reports and different documents. They missed one. And so we got the name of the man who attacked him. And nothing ever happened to that man. In fact, he was released. He was paroled. He was back in within a year. He went back to prison, but he was actually released.
These are the things that happen. And it's so common. You know, the United States, as I say, the United States across the board is so inconsistent. And you would think that we were living in the United States of Africa or something. But this is the United States of America. There's more consistency in places like Africa than any place else. And it's because they're a continent. And even that, with the continent, with all the continents, with all the countries in that one little continent or one big continent, you still have more consistency. In America, every single state is run differently. Every prison's run differently, but yet the problems are all the same. The abuses are all the same. So what is it about? I mean, it's something that it's so simple for people who are supposed to be so educated to be able to run a country, to be able to prevent attacks like that, to be able to rehabilitate and release, and yet they can't even do that. That's
no,
bad.
They release angry, bitter people
yeah.
from prison that are
they come out
you know,
worse than they go in.
They're angry, they're bitter, they go out and they commit a worse crime than they did before, and people get hurt. They're more violent when they get out.
Look at the law enforcement officers that have been killed because why? Everybody's saying, oh, these officers were killed. They don't realize maybe those officers aren't the ones that did the abuse. You know, maybe they're not the ones that did the beatings, but they're part of law enforcement. So when a lot of these prisoners come out, they come out with that mindset, you know, these people,
mm-hmm.
they harmed me, they beat me, they did all this, and now, you know, they're going to do to them what they did to what they were subjected to.
Yes,
and
you
I
see
think
more
that's
and more police officers being killed now, and I believe
mm-hmm.
that's the problem.
That's it. And I probably would
the
feel the same way.
The guy that was released
me.
From parole, when you attack someone in this state, assault is a Major 11 crime. If you get 20 years, you serve 20 years. And assault is a 17-year crime. But that man who attacked my son was released on parole. He didn't get any charges at all.
I think
so
because prisoners, They say the worse the prisoners in the prisons, the better the gods like them. And I say it's out of fear. You know, gods want, they don't want to be on the bad side of the ones that can actually harm them. So they're up there, they're the ones that are giving the hardcore criminals all these breaks and doing favors for them because they're on the good side. And I'm sure the prisoners, they probably do a lot for the gods too. But the problem is, as a result, the wrong people are being blamed for a lot of things that are happening. A lot of them are being blamed. You know, that one in California, he was due to be out, like I said, I think I said in the last, one of the last radio shows, he was due to be out in a matter of months. And the guards, at the last minute, the guard claimed that he spit in his face and they gave him another 5 years. This is the kind of things that are not, to me, they're not normal either. And these guards are getting away with that. It's a shame.
Probably
like
job security.
Let me ask you: was the inmate who supposedly spit in the guard's face, was that caught on? Excuse me, was that caught on camera?
You know what happens when they beat a prisoner, and I know this for a fact. When they beat a prisoner, some of them do it in a place where the cameras cannot be caught. When they cannot be caught on camera, this is another main thing. So. If it happened and it wasn't caught on camera, then they would say, well, they were not near a camera at the time. But the thing is, guards today, they have actually beaten prisoners, and one prisoner said they were in the chow hall, the prisoner that was beaten, and there was a camera, and the prisoner begged for us to get a lawyer, because he said it was all on video. Even Prisoner Legal Services in Massachusetts knew this, that we were trying to get somebody that could go in and view the camera, and they did nothing. That's why when you say Pam's lawyers, the ones that defended her son, that's a good lawyer, because this Prisoner Legal Services is something a lot of prisoners have no use for, Prisoner Legal Services. They think that they're part of the prison, but they never went in. So what they did, they said in front of this prisoner, they said the next time we're going to do it, we'll do it where there's no camera, right in front of the prisoner, to let the prisoner know, well, this is what we're going to do next time. Like, we're going to do it again, but next time we're going to be a little smarter about it. And these are the way they get away with a lot of these things, because they can actually find a spot where no one can see what they're doing. And when there's no lawyers that are either bold enough, confident enough or competent enough to go in and to view these videotapes, then these prisoners, they have a problem because they can't get the representation. But let that prisoner die, and these lawyers are quick to jump in because they know there's going to be money involved for sure and less work for them.
Yeah.
Well, it's not the case. That's not the case. If prisoners die, oftentimes, no lawyers come forward, or if they do, they send forward their crooked lawyers like the Jenny Cochran firm, who has the case of the man who was baked to death on Rikers Island, who jumped in to get my brother's case when he was secretly arrested and murdered in Memphis Shelby County Jail. We got not a penny. So I want you to know that unless you follow a case down the road, you may think that people get money from their lawsuits, but actually the lawyer who took the case took it in order to defraud the family and cover up for the system. That's why I wanted to get your guest lawyer's name so that we could use that to recommend people to his firm, because it's very rare that you find an attorney who's actually working for the accused and who's actually working for the families after wrongful deaths of prisoners. Very rare. I want to let you
a lot
know
of the attorneys
that.
Ask. Yeah, a lot of them ask, "What's your son or daughter in prison for?" And to me, that makes no difference. It doesn't make any difference what they're in prison for. They've been abused.
Lawyers shouldn't. And I'll tell you, I contacted a lawyer. It was a lawyer that was recommended to me by another lawyer, a female lawyer, and this was in Pennsylvania. And the female lawyer said, if anybody can help, this is the one, you know, you want to call. So I called this lawyer, 3-4 times. Never returned my call. So I wrote back to her and I thanked her. I said, I want to thank her because she told me herself she's solo. So she said she couldn't do it because she's preparing for trials and everything. But she said she's working with a woman who has a loved one incarcerated. She said, and I know what the system is like. So she referred me to this man to get help, and I contacted him. And I don't know if it's because he heard from other lawyers something or if he just plain was just ignorant. But to me, I wrote back and I thanked her for trying. I said, but he wouldn't even return my calls. I said he couldn't even let his secretary call me to say there was nothing they could do. And I called 3 or 4 times in 3 or 4 days. And so she wrote back, and she was really upset that he didn't act more professional in responding to me. And she gave me the name of another female attorney. But this is what happens, too, with some of these lawyers. You would expect lawyers to want to hear both sides to a story before they judge. And when you hear of a lawyer that doesn't even respond to you, and I explained to her, I have a nonprofit. I said, I'm an advocate. I said, but I also have a loved one inside. And this is how I started New Vision Organization. So I don't know if it was a lawyer that might have said something. I don't even know because they don't give you an opportunity to defend yourself because they're not professional enough to even tell you, you know, what they've heard, if anything. And this really bothers me because I'm saying if there's lawyers out there like that, that can judge without hearing both sides or having all the facts, then they don't belong in the field that they're in. They really don't.
If I were you, lawyers
today.
That lawyer did that. Count yourself lucky because he was not interested in the case, and if he had gotten the case, it wouldn't have done you any good. I want to read to you a little short list of the companies that are presently using prison labor, and you can shop accordingly. The companies are IBM, Boeing, Motorola, Microsoft, AT&T, Texas Instruments, Dell, Compaq, Honeywell, Intel, Northern Telecom, TWA, Nordstrom's, Revlon, and Macy's, and Target. So that's a list of companies that are using right now prison laborers. All of these are good companies. They're major, they're probably Fortune 500 companies. Some of them are Fortune 100 companies. They're using prison laborers to keep from hiring people who are looking for jobs and who are free. Once you go to prison, you get free uniforms and you get a very good job, but you don't get paid. In Georgia, you get paid zero. In some states, you get paid like 20 cents an hour. And some
about 50 cents an hour.
More. But I want you to know that those are the companies, some of them, that are using prison laborers instead of hiring young people at their standard wage before they go to prison. So understand that when you talk about prisons and prison labor, and when you talk about prison profits, you are speaking of a great many wealthy white liberals. That's why you cannot get help from the organizations. That's why you cannot even get help from human and civil rights organizations that claim to be in business to help people. They are thriving off the present prison industrial complex, which is basically back to slavery. That's what it basically is. It says that
I heard about Target. I'm familiar with Targets and all the things that they have done.
Saw their profits grow by nearly $1 billion between 1980 and 1994, largely due to slave labor. So they are profiting greatly off the slave labor, and you have a hard time finding anyone who will actually be of assistance when prisoners are brutalized or killed because they don't want to rock the boat, including the media. So thank you, ladies.
Well, I believe that's the same situation with prison illegal services and others like it. Oh, hold on a second. Let me shut this thing off. sometimes we get too many calls, and I meant to shut this off sooner. Anyway, that's what happens with a lot of these prison legal services. I understood too. I don't know how true it is, but Pennsylvania Prison Society, one of the advocates there said the same thing. They get contributions. They get large contributions, according to sources, from the DOC. And so when these organizations that are getting these large contributions from the Department of Corrections in the different states, they're not going to want to, like you say, they're not going to want to rock the boat. So this is where a major problem comes in, too, because this is when we try to get help for the prisoners. There's only so much that they're going to do, and which is not very much at all. So what,
exactly.
What happens in a case?
I want you to know that there is something on board, though. Excuse me. What is your guest name, Leona?
Pamela.
Pam Eller. Yes.
Pam Eller. E-L-L-E-R?
Yes.
Okay. Well, Pam, I want you to know there is one thing that we can do, especially for mentally ill prisoners, and that is that a congressman out of Pennsylvania, his name is Representative Kim Murphy, he's introduced a bill into Congress, and it's called the H.R. 3717 bill, Helping Families in Mental Health Crisis Act. And his bill proposes that police officers and prison guards be given CIT training, which is crisis intervention training, so they will learn how to apprehend and contain mentally ill prisoners without hurting them. Secondly, his bill proposes introducing AOT programs, that's assisted outpatient treatment programs, that mandate that psychiatric patients must continue their psychiatric treatment once they leave prisons or jails or hospitals, and that they would be given subsistence assistance in the form of housing and food if they're financially needy. And the third thing is that he proposes relaxing the HIPAA laws. I bet when your son was hurt behind bars, you had trouble relaying to prison officials and doctors about your son's injuries because of the HIPAA laws, and your son was an adult. So he proposes relaxing those HIPAA laws when it comes to mentally ill prisoners so that their families will have more say-so in their treatment and care. And then he also proposes other measures in this bill, and it's called H.R. 3717, the Helping Families in Mental Health Crisis Act. And this bill was doing very well with Republicans, believe it or not, but not at all well with Democrats. The Democrats are the ones who seem to want to prevent treatment, to prevent that would prevent crimes. I said the Democrats seem to be the main ones who want to prevent treatment to the mentally ill, which would in turn lower our prison budget and reduce crimes in the communities. They are standing in the way. They will not get on board and co-sponsor this bill. And I have a list of four Democrats from the Congressional Black Caucus who were co-sponsors but who were induced somehow to drop their support for the bill. And so they backed out and won't support the bill anymore. So I don't know what they were offered, but they backed out.
Mary, is
so
this in Pennsylvania?
Is what we're up against.
Is this federal?
I'm sorry?
This federal?
Is this in Pennsylvania? It was introduced in December, and it's a health care bill that we desperately need. It will actually shift money away from some of these do-nothing psychiatric associations that are getting big donations from the government. It will shift their money instead of charging taxpayers more money. This bill will shift some of their budget to the care of the people with serious mental illness. And so that's why they're fighting against it so, because it proposes instead of them making all the money for doing nothing, It proposes using the money to help people with serious mental illness. So rather than this bill being supported, it's being fought tooth and nail because it really wouldn't cost taxpayers much more or any more than they're already paying. But it's a matter of who gets the money.
So people can help by writing to their senators and congressmen in support of these bills.
Well, it's just one bill I really want you to keep in mind to support right now, and that's H.R. 3717, the Helping Families and Mental Health Crisis Act. It's a comprehensive bill that actually has many provisions. It's not just one provision it has. It has numerous provisions that would help people with serious mental illness.
I think that's a good start as far as the training goals. But I don't think that's the entire plan that should be put in place. I think what they need to do is put a plan in place to stop overseeing these facilities on the outside in the communities, and stop putting these prisoners in those facilities rather than behind bars, because crazy people need to be in hospitals. So they might, doing this bill is good to train
I forgot one of the important provisions. You know, the reason mentally ill people are incarcerated rather than in hospitals, as you suggest, is because back in the late 60s and early 70s, they withdrew Medicaid, which paid for inpatient treatment. And this bill also does provide for resuming Medicaid for certain facilities so we would have more mental hospital beds. So thank you for mentioning that, because that is also in the bill. So that's why prison investors hate this bill, because it would render fewer mentally ill people to prison. And some of the mental health organizations hate this bill. They say it's because they disagree with mandated psychiatric treatment. But the truth is they disagree with the money being shifted from their pockets to the people who need the money. That's what I feel.
Exactly. So that's what it's all about.
Yes, H.R. 3717, Helping Families and Mental Health Crisis Act. And I want to let the audience know that whereas you might not have a person in your family with mental illness, don't think this bill won't help you. Because those families that were out there in Santa Barbara that got shot lost family members to a mentally ill young man. It would have helped them. So the thing is that his family, Mr. Elliott's family, had called the police about their family member who they thought was losing it, and the police didn't pay them any attention. So the thing is that now the system waits until there's a body someplace in order to help families with their mentally ill loved ones. And if that system was changed, then there would be fewer mass murders by mentally ill people. So you don't have to have a mentally ill person in your family to care about mental health treatment being more readily available. We all shop at the same malls. We all walk the same streets and drive on the same streets, and we're all susceptible to injuries and deaths by people who have had their mental health care ignored. Thank you.
You know, Mary, that's true. And the sad thing is it's going to happen someday. It's lightning can strike anywhere, anytime, and anyone. So it's going to happen to them, somebody, anytime. So these people, they don't realize it's not happening in their family, so they could care less. It's, you know, they're not susceptible to that kind of trauma or tragedy. But everyone is. It's like moving to a new community and having people say, oh, nothing bad happens. This is a safe community. It's not anymore. No one knows what's going to happen, when it's going to happen. We don't really know from one day to the next. And it's not about just somebody coming from a bad family, because I've learned since I've been doing this, there is a lot of people out there who come from very good families. And they have, unfortunately, they've had their breakdowns, or they've had things happen that were inevitable. And it's no fault of the families. It's no fault of anyone's but the system itself, because if the system didn't make it so difficult to get help for your loved ones, when you see something happening, when you see them going through severe depression, or when you see them having some kind of a psychological problem, and they tell you there's nothing they can do because that person is over 21 years of age, you know, there's nothing that you can do. But yet when the crime happens, all of a sudden they're ready to throw your loved one in prison. And that's why I say the communities, the services on the outside, they can come out with Obamacare, which I think is a good idea, but use that Obamacare to try to put the money into these facilities to get these things started as soon as possible. Because until those facilities are put in place, the crime is going to continue to escalate. We have over 2.5 million already.
I'm sorry to disappoint you, Leona, but Obamacare made no provision, as I understand it, for inpatients who are psychiatric, going to psychiatric facilities. They're deliberately
left
out in the cold so they can continue to go to prison. Understand that. Obamacare, as I know it, left no provision for psychiatric inpatients.
See, that's even more reason why the problem's escalating, because they're putting all their funds into the wrong. And as you say, maybe it's because of the money. Maybe it's because I don't think that the president actually has as much power as he thinks he has, because the government is not run by the cabinet, the White House. It's run by corporate offices, government, corporate businesses that are, like you say, that are benefiting off of the privatization of the prisons.
It's all money.
It's all money. But then again, getting
this
back.
This thing is going to continue as long as we allow it to continue. I want you to know that I believe it was change.org, but I have to look it up. They were responsible for 2 or 3 major pension funds that pulled out their investments from private prisons. So 2 or 3 major prison funds have already stopped investing in private prisons. And so I think it was something like $60 million that they withdrew. So I urge everyone to go to your benefit office and look at your own 401k plan and see if you are a prison investor through your pension fund. See if you are a prison investor through your 401k plan. Don't support private prisons if you don't intend to. If you don't intend to be a slave owner, then you need to check and find out if you are a slave owner. See if your retirement fund or your 401k plan is investing in private prisons. Because a lot of people right now who are under the sound of my voice who would never agree to treating mentally ill people the way we're talking about they're treated. They would never agree to a man being boiled alive. They would never agree to a man being baked alive. They would never agree to a man like my brother being secretly arrested, kept 18 days while we looked for him as a missing person with the police line, and then kill him without accountability. They would never agree to those sort of things. But you have to put your money where your mouth is. Are you still buying the products that are made in private prisons? I gave you a little partial list, and it's on my Facebook wall. And is your 401k plan or your retirement plan investing in private prisons and jails? It's your responsibility. Responsibility starts at home. It's time for everyone to check their own finances and see what they're investing in. Thank you.
Mary, that was an awesome idea, and I think that we've tried this, or they've tried it in the past, but maybe now is the time to really bring it back in, is to stop, to strike, not to buy anything from any of these stores, any of these places who are investing. Again, we need to find out which ones, every single one of them, and just stop buying from them. Even if it's just for 1 year, a year, if it's just a month, they're losing a lot of money.
Yes, you can really hurt them through their pocketbook.
And maybe that's the route we need to start taking. Finding out.
And that's your faith.
As you said, Leona, the whole thing is they're doing this for money. So what we have to do is make the money they earn by using prisoner labor as of none effect. Now, I wouldn't mind these companies using prison labor if they were paying them at least minimum wage and if they were giving the prison something for their health care. But you see, if a prisoner hurts himself while making Microsoft products, you, the taxpayer, pay for that injury, you see. So they are getting free labor. They're not having to take account of safety for their workers. They're not having to take into account retirement. They're not paying Social Security on these prisoners. And the prisoners come out of jail and they get no unemployment. Even the ones who've been working for 5, 10, or even 20 years for major corporations, they come out and they're just out. I think that prisoners deserve unemployment if they've been working behind bars. They deserve some money to start out with, at least in the form of unemployment benefits. But these corporations are completely taking advantage of the prisoners. They're treating them as what they are, slaves. They're getting no health safety. They're getting no employee safety. They're getting no unemployment benefits. They're getting nothing paid into their Social Security accounts. They're just getting a free pass. And then when we go buy their products, naturally, they don't want you to work for them. When your child graduates high school and goes to get a job at one of these places, they don't want your child, not until he commits a crime, and then they'll get him, because they only want free labor.
You know, I think prisoners should be able to vote. I think they should be able to, as you say, get paid for their labor just like anybody else. And I don't see any reason why prisoners are not allowed to even vote, because they have the right to vote for people that they feel may be more or less biased in, when it comes to incarceration and things like that. Prisoners, to me, should not be deprived of everything. Because even though they might have committed a crime and they're not eligible for a lot of things, they're still citizens of the United States. I mean, there's no reason why.
And they're intelligent, too.
This is it. There's a lot of people. I mean, we've been working with people in the prison system, in the penal system. He's a former FBI agent, and he tried to expose his peers to his superiors in the New York area for corruption years ago, and they set him up. We've had former police officers, and they got set up because they were trying to. The good ones are the ones that get set up because they're trying to bring the truth to the surface. There's a lot of educated prisoners out there. There's a lot of them who have had breakdowns. There's a lot of them who, you know, the mentally ill, the wrongfully convicted. There's so many prisoners that have committed crimes at a very, very sensitive or vulnerable time in their life. No one looks at this. They look at the crime, they look at the situations, but then they forget about the people that are in there scalding prisoners and doing things, and there's nothing wrong with them. I mean, they're not having any breakdowns. They're supposed to be doing a job that they claim that they're healthy enough to do, and yet they're up here doing these animalistic, barbaric things. So who's the one that really?
The bad news is, the really bad news is that there's one case right now in New York where a prisoner was actually sat upon. The guards grabbed this prisoner and three guards, and one of them choked him to death, crushed him. He was a little guy, and they crushed his body when one of these big guards sat on him and crushed him. And so his sister sued for wrongful death. The state of New York has sent her a bill for $12 million. The state of New York says, okay, you're going to sue us for murdering him. You pay us back for 10 years of Medicaid. So she has received a bill now that's probably more than the lawsuit. So that way, if this lawsuit is paid, what that is saying is, oh, no, we get to kill whoever we want to if they owe Medicaid, if they have received Medicaid, because we are going to fix it so that whatever you get on your lawsuit, you owe us that much and more. Now, understand that we already can't do anything about these guards killing people as far as criminal offenses. And if we lose the right to sue for damages when they murder someone, say, for instance, they start taking out the prison incarceration fee, because, you know, it costs a lot to imprison someone. So suppose before your son could have gotten his recovery, his damages for being beaten, suppose they said, okay, well, we owe you X for beating him and hurting his head or allowing that to happen, but you owe us X, Y, Z for him being in prison these years. So that's the new game I want you to be aware of.
Well, they wouldn't get a dime from me because I'm stubborn.
Yeah, that's what makes a good advocate, though. You have to be.
I am about
it. What they would do is they would take it out of your check before you had been paid for your son's damages.
Yeah. Well, it's not right.
Some prisoners are so right now. Their funds are so tied up with all these lawsuits and everything, and if they're indigent, they don't have any money that they get gets taken from them to pay the fees that they have built up in these lawsuits. And half the time, the lawsuits don't get to the legal documents don't get to the courts. So these prisoners are basically living with no funds at all, but they're getting they're fighting their cases. And they even make it difficult for them to fight their cases, as I say, because the legal documents half the time don't get to the destination. But that's what happens with prisoners today. So they're not making much to begin with, and what a lot of them are making is going right back into the system and their legal documents, the mailing, you know, having to send out court documents, you know, sending it out repetitively. So they make it, and no matter which way the prisoners go, they make it difficult for them. They make it difficult for them to survive, and then to start the beatings on top of that, and the scaldings and everything else. It's something that, and I give Dr. Ansari a lot of credit because he's doing something about this human rights violations in this country, and I admire him for it because not too many people in this country, I haven't seen really many people at all that would take that initiative to go beyond this government and try to do something with it. Now, a prisoner was telling me that the world court, they don't have any jurisdiction over the U.S., which may be true, but at the same time, maybe if enough people
the U.S. has signed certain conventions and certain treaties with the U.N. that it is bound to fulfill. And one of them, 13107, I think, that Bill Clinton signed was one that would respect the human rights of all Americans. Now, if human rights, the human rights include the rights under the U.S. Constitution. So, for instance, when they arrest someone and deny them a trial, they got two guys in Mississippi who've been there 7 and 8 years with trial denied. That is an offense not only against their rights as an American citizen, but that's against their rights as a human being under the United Nations. So America has already signed treaties and covenants with the United Nations, and even though the U.S. did not agree to be governed by the International Criminal Court, that's the ICC, it did agree to treat its citizens with basic human rights, and it's signed to that, and it's not doing it. I don't think that the young man who was boiled to death was treated with human rights. I don't think the young man who was baked to death was treated with human rights. I don't think my brother who was secretly arrested and murdered was treated with human rights. I don't think that when I'm censored and followed and just terrorized because I talk about these things, that's against my human rights. So I want you to know that many people are having their human rights violated, and that is against the covenant that this nation has signed with the United Nations, and you would treat it somewhat differently than if you went to ICC, which is the International Criminal Court, but they are in violation of their own treaties with the United Nations. Thank you.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. That does make sense. So there is something that can be done.
Yes.
Okay. That's good
to
know.
Where do you report that, though, to who do you report these human violations to? Is there some information on that that people can get to and maybe write to them about the abuses that are going on in our prisons?
Yes, I would like to give you Dr. Ansari's email address if you'd like to have it.
Actually, he did mention on the radio talk show that even though he's going to the World Court on the human rights issues outside the prison setting, he's going on the human rights issues in general, but he said that anyone that wants to learn how to do it or to, you know, get more involved in to help with the prison issues, I think he mentioned something about on their website or there was a contact number he had given, that anybody that wants to go to that site, they can actually see the process, or they would help us with the process.
Yes, ma'am.
And that's
Dr.
Ansari.
I will give you the email address when you're ready.
Yeah.
Okay. Just
Are
have
you
to
ready?
Get a pen and paper. Okay.
All right. It's administration. At. The word is administration at
okay.
Scholars, S-C-H-O-L-A-R-S, of, O-F, peace, P-E-A-C-E, .com. So again, Dr. Ansari's email address at his school, American Institute for Human Rights, is administration at scholarsofpeace.com. I want you to know that I'm right now taking the course to become a human rights defender, and I want to talk to you. I invite you to contact me after this show because I am taking the offenses against the mentally ill before the World Court as soon as I finish my course. So human rights defenders will be able to take cases before the World Court like attorneys are. So I just want you to know that, and I want to invite you to contact me after the end of this broadcast, and I'll be glad to talk to you about your son's case some more because I'm Director of Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill, which is your son, and I would be glad to try to help you. Also, I want to ask you if you have a petition going to have him removed to the facility where you feel like he would be safer at this time.
No, I don't have a petition for that at this time.
Well, it would be a good idea, I think. What do you think, Leona? For her to to remove her son.
You know, that might work. We could get one put up on change.org. And we'd have to really get everybody to go and sign it. If we could get 1,000 signatures, that would probably help. You want
and
to
see him be a little bit more careful with your son the next 4 years, even if you don't get him removed, which I don't see why they would want to keep him. But even if you didn't get him removed, it would certainly put more eyes on his safety for everybody to have be signing the petition to have him removed. It would certainly go badly with the Oregon State Penitentiary if something happened to him after you already warned them about his safety and they refused to move him. So I think that it would be well worth your while to start a petition, and you don't just have to limit it to change.org. There's nothing at all wrong with using several petition sources. And you could put up his petition and ask all the activists to get their members to sign it, and I certainly would sign it and pass it around to people who follow me, and then we will get more eyes on your son's safety because I agree with you that he deserves to be moved to the other facility now instead of staying at the one where he sued for brutality.
Yes, I agree.
And Pam, getting the petition going on change.org is very easy, and
mm-hmm.
I've used care to petition in the past, but I haven't been on there for years, so I'd have to go back on there. But we can help you to get that petition out, and we can help you get the signatures.
I'll go check that out.
I want you to know that I don't have much faith in petitions because they're cyber stuff, They issue DOSs for certain people's names. They steal your signatures and everything. But even with all of that, some petitions managed to get hundreds of thousands of signatures. And the thing is that this will let the system know that, hey, we're worried about his safety. We've asked you to move him. Have you already asked me in a formal letter to please move your son because of safety concerns? Have you done that?
No, I've just been writing to them and letting them know his safety is in jeopardy and telling them that
they've been
warned.
Until you ask them formally to move your son to another prison and ask them what you want because you are concerned for his safety remaining in the prison where he's sued for brutality, you have to ask them first because it would look silly that you petitioning them to do something that you haven't even asked them to do and given them a chance to do.
Right, I'll do that. I'll make up a letter and send out to him.
Yes, ask that he be relocated and tell him the name of the prison you would like him to be relocated to and tell them why, that he worries about his safety and you do also. And if you have some incidents to name where he felt threatened, name those. And then send them the letter and send it certified mail, return receipt requested, so that they can't say they didn't get your request. And give them 10 days to respond. Let them know that you are giving them 10 days to respond before you start taking it further. And then in 10 days, if they have not responded or if they respond negatively, then you go ahead with your petition.
Okay. I'll do that.
Okay.
You know, I'm looking at the emails as I'm talking, and I really hate it when we get advocates who are so negative. Like one says, the public gets enraged, of course, and people do take action. However, many do not speak up because, as previously mentioned, the incident does not affect them personally or they are ashamed and don't know how to proceed. We need to empower and encourage people to speak up, but the DOCs have fear on their side as well as retaliation. I do not condemn others for not speaking up. I try to show them how. And then there are religious groups that are very involved in prison reform, the Quakers being one. Methodists are also involved. Again, I will say there's no easy answer and no quick fix. If there are, these types of issues would no longer be. We are fighting an insidious and huge PIC monster. They have the money, we do not. That alone speaks volume. So when I see all these things and these buts, there's a huge difference between the mentally ill and mentally challenged persons. Many organizations are involved, and yes, the media does a fair job of reporting the atrocities. The people get enraged, of course, and do take action. However, many do not speak because they have previously. These are kind of things that are so negative. Whether people have, the media is reporting fairly, or whether people are afraid to speak up or it doesn't do any good, we don't give up. We continuously do that, and we try to unite. But when these advocates think that all they can do is sit at the computer and send these emails back and forth about what should be done, but there's no such thing as but if you come together in unity and make it a point mandated to do something about it. Instead of finding
the negative,
let's look for the positive.
The most important thing that I think needs to be done is that we must continue to demand accountability for prison murders that we know happen, and for police murders that we know happen. For instance, we saw Kelly Thomas get murdered right in front of our eyes. Everybody saw that man get beat down and begged 31 times for his life to be spared. And those police officers just kept beating him and beating him. And when they picked up his bleeding body, he left a pool of blood there. We saw that, and we know the jury did not indict. However, when we saw Rodney King get beaten like that, and we saw that the jury let them off, the federal government came in and they prosecuted those police officers, and they put, I think, three of them in jail. So nothing, as I understand it, has happened yet regarding Kelly Thomas' murder. We need to make an example of several cases and just stay on it and demand justice and demand that the police officers who did the murders or the prison guards who did the murders are actually prosecuted, not just fired, not just transferred, but actually prosecuted. And we need to do like the system does and set some examples. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you don't do anything or say anything, then nothing will change and nothing will happen. So you have to speak out. You have to let people know that you want accountability, that this has to happen, or nothing will happen. Nothing will ever change.
No. And as far as this mentally challenged, you know, what's the difference between mentally challenged? I know there's a difference. I know there's a difference. But when somebody is mentally challenged, they're still slow. They're still in need of help. And mentally, I'm sure there's a lot of mentally ill people out there who are mentally challenged and mentally retarded. I mean, you might not think so.
Well, I think that the difference between mentally ill and mentally challenged is, for instance, an autistic child is mentally challenged, but someone who's schizophrenic or bipolar is mentally ill. Thank you.
Right. And even on an autistic person, which an autistic person I don't believe would be doing something like that, because they really, they kind of like, they can stand there looking at you like they're looking through a stone or whatever. But the thing is with the mentally challenged and the mentally ill, there's still a need for help. You know, there's still a need to protect them and to help them in any way possible, but not to give up on them as though because they're not mentally retarded, they don't deserve the help, because they, just like anybody else, they need that help.
There's a lawsuit going on in Oregon right now. I don't know how the young man ended up in prison. He's autistic, but he ended up, I don't know what they did to him, but they put him in the hole. And he committed suicide, and his mother's suing for wrongful death now.
That's
he was autistic.
I mean.
He
That's
may have
I mean.
Acted out, but they didn't treat him well, obviously. He shouldn't have been put in the hole, and he killed himself.
Yeah.
He should have had mental health treatment. I don't know,
you know,
how he ended up in prison. I don't know what he did.
Years ago,
all I know is he's dead now.
When people committed crimes, they didn't get life sentences without parole. They didn't get solitary confinement for years. You know, and a lot of, and it's sad to say it, but a lot of these prisoners today, they end up spending most of their years in solitary confinement, and that's really sad. Because that destroys their minds completely. I mean, I can't stand to be closed in for a few minutes, never mind 30-something years or 20-something years. And that's what they, and a lot of them on bogus misconducts. You know,
I can't imagine an autistic person being put in isolation with no contact. I know with my son, they gave orders not to even speak to him. And he'd ask for some help, and they would just walk by his door, and they wouldn't even talk to him. He couldn't get anybody to help him at all. And
is your son in isolation now?
No, he isn't in isolation now. No.
He's not?
No, not now. They've threatened him with it.
When is the last time your son was in isolation?
Pardon?
Son?
When is the last time your son was in SHU?
It was about a month ago when his psychologist asked him if he had been thinking about suicide, and he said yes, that he had, that it had crossed his mind, and they put him in isolation.
Yes.
So and now
you know,
he doesn't trust them?
I just want you to be encouraged, because they are thinking of reducing the amount of time mentally ill people can be isolated down to 30 days. I think that New York has agreed to that under lawsuit, that a mentally ill person isolation would have to be limited to 30 days. People who are pregnant, they would not be eligible for isolation at all, and children will no longer be eligible for isolation at all in the state of New York. And you know how it is. As New York goes, the nation goes. So eventually, America is going to have to stop doing these long-term isolations. Thank you.
Well, the result of my son being put into isolation, he doesn't trust them now. And when they say, well, Are you thinking of harming yourself? And he just looks at him. He says, I'm not going to tell you anything because I don't trust you. They said, well, if you don't talk about your feelings, then we're just going to put in your chart that there's nothing wrong with you and put you in general population.
So this is what I mean. And unprofessional. They might have that piece of paper, but first of all, people don't realize when somebody is mentally ill or if they are severely depressed, they're not going to talk. You know, you got to. It's almost like a slow process. You have to get it out of them slowly, not by threatening to put them in solitary confinement. But that's the way the system works. They hire people that don't even know what they're talking about, and then they're going to try to provoke these people into talking. I mean,
if I had a psychiatrist that betrayed me like that, I'd never speak to him again.
Jeez.
So I really can't blame my son for his attitude about them when they say, well, are you thinking about hurting yourself? And he's going to say, I'm not going to talk to you. He doesn't say yes or no. He just says, I'm not going to tell you anything.
Yeah.
What can he do? I don't blame him at all.
Prisoners don't trust. They don't even trust lawyers today. They don't trust lawyers. They don't trust. They don't. These psychiatrists, they misdiagnose them. They put them on medication that's not accurate. Those are prisoners that passed away that died back in 2007 and 8 in Pennsylvania. That was a waste. And every time I think about it, I just get upset all over again because those three young men, they could have survived. One of them was begging for his medication and writing home and telling his family it's not that he wanted it, it's that he needed it. And they still deprived him of that medication. And, again, where were the leaders? Where was the ACLU? And these people now have a chance, an opportunity to do something about all of these abuses and deprivations. And let's see what happens, because advocates are going to come together and try to get them involved again.
I just got a letter from the ACLU telling me again that there was nothing they could do, that they only take high-profile cases, they don't have enough help, and I just filed it along with the rest of them that basically read the same.
I'd like to know who's monitoring them to find out their statistics on who they've helped. You know, I would love to find out what people, incarcerated individuals, has ACLU, Amnesty International, have any of these people helped? That's what I'd like to know. Who monitors them and who can verify or confirm that they've actually done anything for anyone? Where is all the money going to?
I see that they go to advocate and sue on behalf of a person who wants to burn the American flag, but they won't help my son.
I think that's where the money goes. I was looking for some resources the other day online for supportive aftercare resources. And every place that I saw where they had help, you know, the supportive aftercare resources, I went on those sites, and all I was seeing was where they do all this research and statistics and initiatives and all these things. And I'm saying, this is where all this money's going, into research. And if there's so much research being done, why aren't they able to find resources for these prisoners that are coming out? They can't release. I'm working on one right now, a prisoner in Pennsylvania. He was approved for parole last year to be able to leave, and he can't leave until he has a facility, a place to go to. And trying to find the resources for him, all I was finding was all these places that do research. And a lot of those places are affiliated with the government in Pennsylvania. The government in Pennsylvania, even the Salvation Army, and they are not supposed to be connected with the government. I don't know. There's not much help out there,
people that help prisoners. I've found that out. I've, like you, contacted many people, and they either don't have the resources or they choose not to.
Well,
I see come and go.
when you go on those sites again, you look to see the first thing that you're going to see on those websites is a place for funding. Every time they won't. You sometimes you have to really search for their addresses, their information, their contact information. But you never have to search. You never have to search for their donations, contributions. They have it all over the place. Those are the ones that claim they're not doing anything. They're claiming that they can't help.
That's
what
bad.
It's all about.
Yeah, it's about money.
But Pam, why don't you know where to go,
and you know, I just do the best I can. I'm one person, but thankfully there are other advocates like you and Mary that actually help prisoners, and you do what you say you're going to do, and you keep at it. You don't give up. We may get discouraged, but we don't give up.
We can't. We can't give up. But Mary, Pam, why don't you give out your information on your email or whatever where people can contact you if they want to help in any way?
My email is PamelaEller11@gmail.com. And I would appreciate people that would not just help my son, but seriously consider about helping these other prisoners that are being abused to make phone calls or write letters.
Okay.
Like I said, it's in the numbers. If we can just get enough people that will speak out, we can make a difference. We can make some changes. We can get these guards held accountable that are doing these horrific abuses and violating these human rights. These guys don't deserve to be tortured. They're serving their time for what they did, and that's all we can expect. We don't want them turned out into the system after being brutalized by the system.
Exactly. You know, I did social work for many years, and one of the things that I felt really bad about is that a lot of times people are too quick to take children from their homes and put them in foster homes. And, again, it's people that are supposed to be well-educated. They've gone to college and they've gotten their degree. But they come out young men and women who have no idea about cultures. They have no idea about the marriages or children or abuses. And they go into the homes and they threaten the family members that either they need to do things their way or their children will be taken. When you go into a home and you threaten a family that you're going to take their children, naturally they're going to retaliate, they're going to become resistant, and when the social worker goes back to her supervisor, in most cases they side, the supervisor will go along with the social worker. These kids are put in foster homes, which some of them are worse than their biological homes, and as a result of being placed in a foster home that's abusive, or where they're being molested or whatever, the kids come out worse. They have no use for the system, and as they get older, they end up in the penal system. And I see a lot of these things happening too, and I think it's terrible that the people that are supposed to be working with families and children, even when it comes to prisoners, if we don't try to work with them on improving themselves and trying to bring the families together, unite them, rehabilitate them, heal them, do whatever we can to get them back on the right track. And a lot of them don't know how to be parents. They don't know how to be normal because they've lived such horrific lives themselves prior to going to prison. So all I can say is sometimes people need to work with their heart, not so much with their minds, but work with your heart. And when you hear of prisoners, regardless of what they've done, look at it this way. Paul, the Apostle Paul, was a murderer, and he murdered many, many, many Christians, and yet God used him in a major way. Moses, he murdered. God used him in a major way. King David, the same thing. So if in the Bible, if God could use these people in a big way, then that means there's hope for each and every one of these prisoners that we look at, and many of the people don't even want to deal with them because they look at them as animals. And some of them, first-time offenders, some of them mentally ill, some of them wrongfully convicted. And look at how many have been executed. Executed on a wrongful conviction. Now, is the government responsible for that, or do they get away with it because they chose to take a man's life because he committed a crime, when in fact that person was not the right person that committed the crime? So whose fault is that? So there's a lot of people, as Jesus said, let he who has not sinned cast the first stone. People forget too easily. And we live in a society today where everybody thinks that they're the best, you know, that they're so righteous. And yet they have a heart of a cold-hearted Pharaoh. And that's what we need to look at. We need to look at ourselves and look at the things that have happened around us, whether we are part of the problem or whether we are part of the solution. And a prisoner said one time, if we don't do anything, then we're part of the problem.
I've had recently some letters come from prisoners that I've been working to help quite some time, and one is now getting treatment for his skin cancer. You know, it really feels good when you know that you're helping to save someone's life. I don't take credit for it. I just wrote letters and did what I could, and I
appreciate
their hearts were moved somewhere that got him this treatment. And one prisoner wrote to me, and he has had his clemency hearing. He didn't have any family at all to speak of, but we wrote for quite a few years, and his family came back into his life. They were at his clemency hearing, and they spoke up for him and said that he has a home to go home to and a job.
Oh, wow.
And so I'm praying that his clemency hearing, that they'll release him, because he does have these things now. He has a supportive family and a job and a home to go home to. So there are good stories that come out of this, but it's because we take the time and we put the effort out to help these guys. And they're getting medical treatment, and they're getting their family back into their lives. But if we don't do anything, then these good stories aren't going to come out either, because they won't be getting help.
And, you know, the prisoners, as you say, whatever little you can do for them, whatever major you can do for them, they see it. They see it all. And they know that we can't change the system, but they also know that we're trying our best to make the best of what their situation is, to help them the best way we can. So whatever little we can do, you know, when I first started with social services years ago, I was upset because I told my supervisor, I said, I was having a difficult time with one of the families. They just weren't, I wasn't able to get anywhere with them. And I had eight cases at the time when I first started with DSS. I was in training. And my supervisor said, Leona, she said, if you, when working with the clients that you're working with, we're getting the bottom of the barrel. She said, if you have a success story with just one of them, that's a success story. If you can work with one of them and see something positive come of it, that's a success story. She said, and you have eight cases, and you're only having a problem with one of them. So it made me think about it, and it's that's the thing. If we work one-on-one, if we can do one case at a time, if we can see some progress with one case, then we've accomplished a whole lot. And when you have people out there that are doing nothing, and complaining and talking about what can't be done instead of the positives that can be done, then that's saying something. And
but
we can make
a difference. There have been many prisoners that have got help because someone took the time and made the effort, and they are helping. But so much more could be done if we just had more people that would write letters.
Yeah, come together.
Go to your website and read about the prisoners on your letter writing campaign, and write letters. Pick up the phone and make phone calls, and you can make a difference in that person's life. We can save a life. We can make them better. We can get the word out that we won't tolerate the abuses anymore.
Well, those are excellent suggestions, ladies. And the 2 hours are up. Time has flown because we've been enjoying meeting each other and discussing these problems, and I believe that that you will write the letter to the Oregon State Penitentiary and ask them to please transfer your son, write also to the Bureau of Prisons, and write also to the Department of Corrections there in Oregon. Write those three letters, send them all by certified mail asking for a transfer for your son, Vincent, and I believe that that may get him transferred because he's within the amount of years that's arranged for him to be transferred to the minimum security facility where you would like for him to go. And so the Bible says you have not because you ask not, or if you ask, you ask amiss. So before you ask advocates to help you get it done, ask the authorities, would they work with you and go ahead and get that done? And so that would be the best option. And after that, if that doesn't work out for you, if you get no response or negative response within 10 days, then it's time to move on to a petition. And so that's the way we do things regarding prisoners who are being abused or who are under the threat of abuse. We try to notify as many people as possible about the abuse that's going on, and not just to prisoners, but also to people who are under the threat of arrest and who have not been convicted, etc. We try to follow the steps of the so-called democratic process and see where that gets us. And I want to invite you to please come back to other shows on Human Rights Demand. And I want to give you a little rundown on the schedule after I give Ms. Leona Brando, the president of New Vision Organization, an opportunity to wrap up. We're in our last 7 minutes now just to wrap up the show, and I want to give her an opportunity to wrap up, and then I want to give you a little rundown on the schedule because we have other programs that might be helpful to you. Go ahead, Leona.
Okay, I want to thank you, Mary, for bringing us on, and I want to thank Pam for being on with us. I invite anyone that wants to come on the show at any time to talk about the issues, either in their own personal situations or about the abuses going on throughout the country. I spoke with our lawyer. His name is Anchor Jane. He's an attorney out of New York. He's the director of the legal team, and he is. I also asked if he would be willing to come on because he's willing to work with any lawyers, the media, go if he has to go to Florida or any other place on these horrific crimes that have happened with these prisoners being scalded. So he is going to be coming on the show. Right now I'm booked until the 14th of July, but I'm hoping that sometime in July we will have him on. Next week we'll be having Kevin Womble, Sr. He is the president of Back Into Society. He will be coming on with us then. And then we have Dr. Earl coming on the following week. And Lynn Wisenen is a volunteer with NBO, but Lynn has quite a story to tell. She will be on our show in a couple of weeks. She was a former prisoner. She had a very difficult childhood, and she's going to be telling us of her success story, but also of the things that went on in the prison. So, again, we have a lot we're going to be talking about in upcoming weeks, and I hope everyone will tune in. And, again, if anyone and everyone can just help out with Pam Ellis' situation with their son, and also join us in the upcoming movement to put a stop to all of these horrific crimes that are occurring in these prisons. I'd like to have everyone, you can find us on www.newvisionorg.4t.com. We have a new website that is going to be published soon, but right now it's not ready to go out. So, again, thank you, Mary, for everything, and thank you, audience. Okay.
All right. Pam. Well, thank you very much. Pam, would you like to have a last word with the audience?
And Pam's the video of the tape, the video of the show today, where anyone that has missed it can, Mary will have it out there so anyone can go back and listen to the videotape on what happened today. Thanks again, Mary.
Well, thank you. Would your guests like a last word with the audience before I give the rundown on the schedule? Pam?
I'm just I just would like to say thank you very much for having me and for listening to me. I really
absolutely
appreciate it. Thank you.
Certainly, Pam. We're glad to have you. We thank you for coming and for being a mother, speaking out for the benefit of your son. I would like to say your email address again for the audience, and that's Pamela, P-A-M-E-L-A, Eller, E-L-L-E-R, and the number 11, PamelaEller11@gmail.com. So please contact Pam. Let her know that you want to encourage her and that you will support her. She might need a petition signature because she needs her son to be removed from the prison, that's Oregon State Pen, where he was brutalized and he got a serious head injury. After his brain surgery, he was left there in that same facility, and now he's being taunted and he is being targeted for aggression. And so we would like for him to be moved to another facility, a minimum security facility that he does qualify for because he has less than 4 years left on his sentence. And so we're going to pray for that, and we're going to look for help to get that done. And we want to thank you for joining us on Human Rights Demand. I want to give you a little overview of our schedule. Our schedule is available if you Google Human Rights Demand Channel. Just Google Human Rights Demand Channel Schedule. And anytime you lose track of what's coming on what days, just go to Human Rights Demand Channel, and the schedule is there. Now, today you heard Leona Brando, who's president of New Vision Organization. That's a prisoner activist organization. On Tuesdays, we have Dr. Ansari's Human Rights Updates. That's the international human rights attorney that you heard Leona Brando and myself speak about today. He gives presentations every Tuesday. And then on Wednesday, we have Human Rights Demand, Native American Affairs. Native Americans experience unique challenges. Join Native American hosts and guests who are presenting their history, culture, and issues. The current host is Kanupa Mani of the Strongheart Warrior Society. All First Nations people and others are invited, and your questions and comments are appreciated. And that is, he's of the Lakota tribe, but all people of First Nations are invited. And so are you, no matter what nation you're from. The telephone number to call in here, by the way, is 347-857-3293. Again, that's 347-857-3293. Leona Brando and all of our hosts look forward to you calling in, asking questions, and making comments. So please, next time, have the phone number ready and call in and share your viewpoint. On Thursdays, we have Bob Darby, advocate for the homeless mentally ill. Bob Darby has been an advocate for the homeless mentally ill for more than 20 years. He has a BA in psychology from Emory University. Darby also studied psychology and theology in graduate school. He's a former employee of several mental hospitals, including Georgia Regional Hospital, Boston State Hospital, and New Hampshire Hanover Dartmouth Hospital. In 1994, he co-founded the Atlanta Food Not Bums. So he talks about the homeless mentally ill. We have an exciting new show on Fridays. That's Jenny Strozier, Keeping It Real. Jenny Strozier was incarcerated in Georgia prisons for 46 years. He spent 15 of them in solitary confinement. He was in prison from 1968, that's the year Martin Luther King died, up until last year. That's how long he's been in prison, since he was 10 years old. He was initially arrested at age 6 when he and friends broke into an Atlanta warehouse and stole cigarettes for the family and candy. He was sentenced to prison at age 10. His sentence was lifted to 90 years after he cut a prison guard. Strozier's warden told him he would never expect him alive, but he did. He became a Christian in the 1980s, and he changed his life. He graduated from high school, and he made great successes. Release the Innocent comes on Saturdays. and Human Rights for Prisoners March comes on Sundays. All the shows start at 3 p.m. except for Jenny Strozier, which starts at 6:30 p.m. Thank you for joining us on NBO, and this is Mary Neal. God bless you. Please come again every day at 3 p.m., 6:30 on Fridays.